Hello everyone, welcome to Women Folk, the brand new podcast with me, Maria Wallace. I've been a grassroots music promoter under the name True North Music for the last 10 years, putting on gigs and booking tours for some of the finest artists in folk roots, bluegrass and Americana. This brand new podcast is all about telling the stories of women working in roots music, on stage and behind the scenes.
For me to get to pay tribute to my dad and his work through my music is honestly, I mean, my dad and I were super close, and it's moving. It's very moving. Even playing these tunes live, it's very cathartic and it's really special.
My guest today on Women Folk is Scottish fiddler, guitarist, singer and composer Hannah Reid. Hannah's highly regarded on both sides of the Atlantic as a solo performer and a frequent collaborator with other artists. We chat about her various musical adventures, her childhood experiences living on the remote Isle of Egg, and her recent project, The Fungi Sessions, Volume 1, an instrumental tribute to her late father, mycologist Professor Nick Reid. As well as being an incredible musician, Hannah has some fascinating tales to tell and is a delight to talk to. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Hannah Reid. Welcome to the podcast, Hannah Reid.
Hello, Maria. Thank you for having me.
You're coming to us from your home in California.
I am.
But we're just in the UK last week.
I was. I just got back last night.
So, yeah, so you had a couple of weeks in Scotland, England and Wales with your duo with Michael Starkey. But also kind of forming a trio, two different trios.
Yeah, those two tours were, they were just brilliant. They really filled me up. I'm kind of still beaming from the last few weeks of making music with both of those, well, all three of them. The reason that we decided, Michael Starkey, for those of you who don't know, banjo player and guitar player, we've been playing together for quite a few years. And off the back of our last tour, we thought it would be nice to have another vocal in the mix for our next tour and another instrumentalist, whether that was a guitar player. We weren't sure exactly what that looked like, but we kind of thought about it and like thought about some, there were quite a few potential people who we could bring into the mix. And we wanted to bring somebody else who was based in the UK. And then we were like, well, Cahalen Morrison, who's originally from New Mexico and now lives in Glasgow. He's a great banjo player, mandolin player, guitar, and singer, songwriter, great crack. So we brought Cahalen on for the Scottish run. And then down south, we brought Vera Van Heeringen on board. She's just so great, great singer, songwriter, guitar player. And it was everything we could have, I could have wished for and more. It was just, it was really special. I'm glad that you got to see one of those because hopefully there'll be more.
Yes, you all looked really happy to be playing the songs together. It was really a lovely, beautiful gig, yeah.
Oh, thanks. We had a lot of fun. I'd spent a little bit of time with Vera, but I'd never played music with her. So,
wow. You
know, and that's often how it goes. You don't quite know. You like set up a project, as you know, mm-hmm. You set up a project and who knows how it's actually going to go. And luckily, both all those collaborations ended up going so well and we were beaming. On my knees, on my knees. Oh, let me fall, darling, let me fall.
I know your dad, Professor Nick Reid, was a renowned mycologist, and I wanted to ask you about the project that you released, last year, The Fungi Sessions, Volume 1,
yes.
Which is, I think, compositions all inspired by fungi.
Thank you.
And that sounds fascinating. Tell us a bit more about that and how that came to be.
So my dad died at the beginning of the pandemic, and he'd been ill for many years. I know you met my dad as well, Maria.
Yes. I'll tell that story in a minute.
That was lovely. I love that that happened. And that was at the beginning of him getting ill, actually, but right when you met him.
Oh, man. I'll just say at this point, so we went to see Hannah do a house concert with Jefferson Hamer back in, I don't know, is that 2016.
It was December 2017, I think. Yeah.
I must look it up. And we didn't realise when we got there, and it was at your dad's house in Manchester, and quickly realised that we were the only people who weren't family members or neighbours. Yeah. And you were so welcoming, and your dad was so welcoming.
Aww.
And treated us so, you know, sort of brought us into the bosom of the family. And yes, what an amazing guy he obviously was. But I just met him that one time. But clearly a very special person. So, yeah.
Oh, well.
I'm so sorry for your loss.
Oh, thank you. Thanks. It's definitely been a very difficult thing to deal with. But this project, the Fungi Sessions, came about because my dad had been based at Edinburgh University for many years, several decades, in the fungal cell. He was a fungal cell biologist. And then he moved down to Manchester and to start a new lab there. So that's when you met him. The reason this album came about was actually a fiddle player / scientist from Edinburgh called Edward Wallace. He contacted me pretty out of the blue and said, you know, an album that just said fungi music ? An email that said fungi music. And the crazy timing of receiving this email, it was 3 years to the day since my dad had passed. So it was just like crazy time. It was very much on my mind. And I received this email.
Wow.
Yeah. Did
Edward know your dad? Was he familiar with your dad's work?
Yeah. So he was very familiar with dad's work, and Edward is my age. So he never actually studied with my dad, but, Edward had some extra funding, knew about me. He had seen me perform another tune that I'd written called Waltz de la Fungi, which I wrote for my dad, which was on the duo album with Michael Starkey. And he had seen Michael and I perform at the Traverse Theatre in Edinburgh, that tune. And when I said, this is for my late father, Nick Reed, who's a mycologist, afterwards he came up.
Wow.
So he was like, funny thing, like, I also play the fiddle. I'm based at Edinburgh. I'm a scientist. It was just, that was a funny link. That was the year before. But then when he came into some extra funding and said to me, like, look, I would love to get you to write an album of music inspired by fungi. So I got in touch with one of my dad's old colleagues, Pat Hickey, who is based at Summer Hall in Edinburgh. And dad and Pat over the years had worked together for years on many different things, but they'd also made a bunch of time-lapse videos of mycelium growing. So I said to Pat, look, would you be up for making this record with me and helping me with my inspiration? Because when I was first contacted, I was like, oh, well, I could do this, I could do that. There was so many ideas. But suddenly I figured out the Pat link, and then it felt like a very concise concept album, which was really helpful for my writing. So
yeah.
Pat sent me hundreds of hours of footage, and I went through it all and picked out little sections that resonated with me that I felt like I could pull characters out of and that kind of sparked something within me. And so, yeah, I watched these clips on loop, and I gave myself 1 week to write the album. I find that, I mean, as you know, as a songwriter and from my previous work, albums can take forever to write, and the editing that goes into, you know, I love this, I hate this, I love this, I need to you know, take out stuff and then you go back and you're like, why did I take that out? And often I feel like the organic initial reason that you wrote the music in the first place can slightly get lost. And I just didn't want that to happen.
Yeah. You wanted to capture that energy while you were immersed in the visuals and the thoughts about it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I just wanted it to feel fresh and, yeah, organic. I mean, I said that, but I really wanted to feel that way. So, yeah, I wrote half of it here outside in my garden here in California. And then I went over to Scotland and I wrote the other half in my mum's house. Oh, I wrote, and I had one stop in the middle at a friend's house in Baltimore, and I wrote my tune Stinkhorn in his basement. Then I finished it there, and then Michael Starkey and I went into the studio in Scotland and we recorded it the next week. And I just had sent him all sorts of just like tune, just simple tunes, and we brought those tunes to life and did it all live in the studio. And then my friend Charlie, who produced my solo album before, he's a very talented guy, but he also does sound design. So then he wove in sounds from mid-coast Maine. He lives up in the state of Maine. He went out into the woods and recorded the forest floor while listening to the album. Mm-hmm. Then Jeff Picker, bass player, he played on my first record. He plays, well, he's been playing with Nickel Creek for the last couple of years, but
yes,
and with Sarah DeRose. And he's a longtime collaborator of mine. And he overdubbed some bass. So he was the only other instrumentalist in the mix. Mm-hmm. And he was in Nashville and he overdubbed bass. And then the album, again, I wanted it to be a really short release time. So I recorded it in June and it came out in September. And I just did it all myself. And
wonderful.
It was really, yeah, I did the graphic design. I did just everything. It was almost like this little like challenge for myself. I was like, mm-hmm. I can do this. Because the last couple of records had been with a label, and which was a great experience, but I wanted to like, can I still do this myself? And I can. And it was great and it went well. And it's been really, really amazing to get to perform it over the last couple of years.
I saw there was a special performance at the Botanical Gardens in Edinburgh.
Yeah, it was amazing. So the Royal Botanic Gardens, Edinburgh, is 5 minutes from my mum's house in Edinburgh. And so it's the special place that I have grown up. Yeah. And so actually the Botanics it's a really special place from when I was tiny. My mum would take us there. We'd be running around. My dad would take us into the labs there with some of his colleagues. Like, it's a really special place.
Yeah.
And which I know really well.
It has significance for you.
Yeah. So when one of the directors for exhibitions there, Amy Porteous, got in touch with me about my work being featured in this new exhibition, Fungi Forms, it was so cool. And they basically used one of my videos, my tune Silver Fae, which has this video linked with it. And the first room you walk into in the exhibition, it just ended in December. It ran for 4 months, but it was this big wall, and the whole wall was filled with my film, and my music was playing on loop for 4 months.
Amazing.
And it was amazing. And then for the it opened during the Edinburgh Festival, and for I did a performance within, so last August in the gardens there, and it was just beautiful. Cahalen Morrison was in the band, and Matt Carmichael, a great Glaswegian sax player, and I brought Charlie over from Maine, who was playing percussion and doing all the environmental sounds. So the way that I have been performing it has been as a suite. So from top to bottom, all the way through with no breaks, which I love. It's been so cool to do that. You know, it takes people on a journey, and yeah, it's really
And again,
really
that's quite different from the other things that you do in terms of, you know, a lot of songs as well as tunes. So it's kind of got mm-hmm. its own particular flavor.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty niche.
Yes.
It's pretty niche.
But fascinating.
So fascinating. And for me to get to pay tribute to my dad and his work through my music is honestly, I mean, my dad and I were super close, and it's moving. It's very moving. Even playing these tunes live, it's very cathartic.
Yes.
And it's really special. Yeah, he actually was... he was involved with the British Mycological Society. He was the president for a bit. And this time last year, I applied for their, they do a arts grant every year for a project that it combines the world, some art form with fungi. And I won it last year. So that was to make Fungi 2, which I recorded in November.
So volume 2 is in the works.
Yeah, that's going to come out this year.
Mm-hmm. Marvelous. We'll look forward to seeing that.
Yeah, so I'm in the middle of that. I recorded it in the same studio with Michael, and I've got some very special guests laying down overdubs, actually, like in the next couple of weeks from various corners of the earth. So that's still to all fully come into fruition, and it'll be finished by the end of next month.
You've been quite a frequent collaborator with other artists. Some of the names that spring to mind are Tony Trischke, Roan Rheingans, Sarah Giroux. So how do those come about? Do they just kind of naturally evolve, or did you kind of reach out to people? What draws you to these kind of collaborative projects?
Well, for those three, so Sarah Giroux and I've known Sarah since she was 16. She'd just turned 17 when I met mm-hmm. her. I was studying at Berklee College of Music in Boston, and she came to visit Boston as she was going to go to the New England Conservatory that next year. And we had loads of mutual friends, and we became like besties right away. So from that, we've just been playing music and hanging out for forever. And then Sarah sang on my first couple of records, and it's just so fun to get to play music with one of your best friends, and yeah, so lovely. And I'm in awe of Sarah and all her projects. And then with Roan, I was invited to be a part of the 10 women British supergroup Songs of Separation. I didn't know Roan or any of Lady Masery, her band, before that project. And for those of you who haven't heard of Songs of Separation, this was a project that came about off the back of the Scottish referendum. And a musician called Jen Hill, a bass player who's based in Edinburgh at the time, thought about the idea of bringing together five Scottish women, five English. And we came together on the Isle of Egg, which is where I lived when I was little, mm-hmm. came together, and we made an album up there, wrote and rewrote some old trad songs, but wrote a bunch of brand new music. And that was with Corinne Polwart and Eliza Carthy, Mary McMaster, Lady Masery, Kate Young, Jen Butterworth, Jenny Hill.
Wow, an all-star cast.
Yeah.
That ended up winning like Folk Album of the Year or something, if I recall.
Yeah, it won the Folk Album of the Year at the BBC Folk Awards in 2017. So that was awesome. That was an amazing project to have been a part of. And off the back of that, that was why I ended up signing with Hudson Records, Sheffield-based label. And I actually had released an album before that, but this was like my first mm-hmm. proper release as a solo artist. Roan Rheingans and I became besties from doing that project. And then we released a couple of things together.
Yes, I suppose this is how these musical connections happen and serendipitous projects, and that's really lovely, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, I think so much of it is, for me, it's like connecting with people, and very rarely would I go into a project not knowing anybody. Like having that bond with them is really important, as well as just playing music. Like I feel like I have played music with a lot of strangers over the years who I didn't necessarily gel with personally, but it's so different when you do have that, because you know it'll last, right? And so same with Tony. I met Tony living in New York. He lives in New Jersey, and the Trishkas, they're the best. Love them. And he's like one of my like American like dads. Like that family are just, I'm super, super tight with them. But yeah, Tony, every year he does a winter time tour. And I've been doing that. I think I've done it 6 or 7 times with him. And just to say, like, I feel really lucky with all the collaborations I've done.
You mentioned the Isle of Egg when you were talking about the Songs of Separation project. And I know that you spent some of your childhood there, as well as growing up in Edinburgh. Can you tell us a bit about that? Did that kind of impact how you came to play traditional music?
Yeah. So the Isle of Egg is a remote island off the west coast of Scotland, 12 miles off the coast. And it's an amazing place. When we lived there, so I moved with my mum and my sister. We moved in winter and lived in a little house completely off the grid.
Wow.
And it was this like time of my life I look back at, and I just think it's like the most amazing thing that we could have ever done. You know, like at the time, you know, I'm sure I was like, we don't have water and we don't, but also like, you know, going up the hill to pump the water, using a mangle to dry, like we just had an open fire. We pretty much lived in one room downstairs and one in our, it was a little like top house, what they're called up there in the Highlands.
You seem far too young to have had that kind of experience. But yeah, so it's quite an adventure that your mum had.
Oh, massively so. I mean, we'd been going there since I was born, and she knew from when we were little that she would love to live on the island. But when my parents split up, she was like, right, this is a great time to like go away and live in this very remote place. And so my sister and I were 2 of the 9 kids in the school, all in one classroom, and we did a bunch of Gaelic there. And music wise, there was an incredible amount of trad musicians coming to the island, but like it's a bit of a mecca for folk musicians. So I started playing fiddle when I was 7 years old, and that was in Edinburgh. So I took a couple of, I was doing some like group kind of like more like classical violin stuff, but on Egg, whenever musicians came through the island, I was like there with my fiddle, like trying to like play tunes with them. So for example, Angus Grant, the fiddle player from Shugle Nifty, Shugle Nifty were always coming up to Egg, and Angus had a very special place on Egg. Like he's just so welcomed in, and everyone loved Angus. And his dad, also Angus Grant Senior, he's still around. Angus Grant Senior, he's kind of from the Glenuig, Aharical neck of the woods, on the mainland. And Angus Grant Junior, he passed away a few years ago, which is so sad. But he was so cool, and I just thought he was the best thing ever. And I was a big Shugle Nifty fan as a young girl. And so whenever Angus came to the island, I was like there, like at the pier with my fiddle, like hoping he would be like, Hannah, let's play a tune. And he always did. He was always like, yeah. So there was that. And there was like the band Fluke. Like I remember those guys. Do you know them? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like flute driven, Sarah and Brian. They were like these two flutes at the front of this band, and they came and played on Egg when I was about 11, and that gig changed my life. Like seeing the energy on stage, and just I think the fact seeing so much live music from such a young age was so inspiring.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And quite amazing in such a tiny community that it was such a draw. It was a destination place for gigs.
Oh, truly. And it still is. It still is. I mean, the islanders own the island. They did a buyout in 1999.
Yeah.
So that and the music, I feel like that was all entwined. It was all really important. Like I was thinking about this recently. Like we would, after we were lived in the top house, we had a wee caravan, which was kind of on the edge of this cliff. And, you know, we were, it felt like we were like the last frontier there on egg. Like it was just getting walloped by gale force winds and the rain. And I'd be sitting in there playing my fiddle and learning, you know, listening to like Martin Hayes recordings. And at this point it was just, it was all trad. So I was just listening to loads of that music and like learning by ear and listening, and just like, so that was as like a little one. And, you know, my mum and dad so supportive of it, just from the get-go, and just so lucky in that way. But yeah, so there was a couple on Egg called who still live there, Maggie and Wes Fife, and they have a house which is, there's actually a tune called Maggie and Wes's Cayley House, and it's a lovely tune, and you should, anyone listening to this, you should check it out. It's a great tune. Their house became this like the place that everybody would go to. They'd get off the boat, drive over to the other side of the island. I would like basically be there. You know, whenever there was something happening, I'd be like in that house playing, listening. It was just the norm, which is amazing. That was just like what we did.
Later on, you were back in Edinburgh later on in your childhood, and I think you went to music school in Edinburgh and then ended up in Paris and then ultimately went over to Berklee College of Music.
Mm-hmm.
How did that kind of progression happen? What drew you to studying in America?
So as a teen, so I went from being really into trad to getting very into jazz to getting into really obsessed with bluegrass and old time. And being in Scotland, I didn't actually know that Sore Fingers existed. The internet wasn't like, there was no way for me to know. So one of my best friends, Maeve Gilchrist, who's a great harp player, she was living in Boston studying at Berklee at the time. She was also from Edinburgh. I went to visit her, and the string scene was just exploding at that time. You know, Rashad Eggleston and Hanukkah Castle and Laura Cortese, they'd all gone, already graduated from Berklee. They were like the first class of, and Casey Driesen, first class of rootsy string players, and Joe Walsh as well. And so like that, they'd all been through it. And at that moment, when I visited Maeve, there was all sorts going on. Crooked Still were all based in Boston, mostly coming through. Well, Aoife went to New England Conservatory, but like, yeah, so they were, there was a kind of this Berklee, New England, NEC thing. And I was just, well, I was 18, 19, and I just was like, oh my God, this is it. This is so cool. And I went to this gig, The Wayfaring Strangers. It was, Matt Glazer's band. So Matt was running the string department at the time, and he's a great jazz violin player and fiddle player, and he used to play a lot with Stefan Grappelli back in the day. And Matt Glazer is one of a kind, and truly seeing him leading this band, which was like this bluegrass old time jazz fusion band. So Aoife was singing with it. Heather Massey was singing from Wailing Jennies.
That's Aoife O'Donovan, yeah?
Yeah, Aoife O'Donovan, sorry. And I think Miss Tess, I think she was singing in it as well. And then there's just like the band was so amazing. And I was like, oh my God. Like Maeve was playing with them as well on the gig. And I was like, this is so amazing. And I like got obsessed with that CD. And I was back and then I went back to Scotland. And anyway, I ended up auditioning for Berkeley and I got in and I went the next year. And I feel really, really lucky to have when I went. I mean, it was pure luck that I started at the same time as, you know, Duncan Wickle, great fiddle player, and Eric Robertson. And then the next year was Don Leslie and Alex Hargraves and Sierra Hull, Molly Tuttle, Bronwyn, Keith Hines, Courtney Hartman. Like we all were there together. Yeah. And so it was crazy. And it was like this, it was amazing. Like we were all in school together. We were all in classes together. Jenna Moynihan, like, and there's so many more. We would get together and play at Dom Leslie had a flat, and it was Dom, Sam Grisman, Eric Robertson, and Alex Hargraves. They all lived together and in two rooms with two bunk beds. And and we would all, whoever was coming to town, we'd all just like everyone was jamming in that house 24/7. But I remember parties where like Edgar Meyer would come, like big trio with Paul, Court, and Alex. And it, I remember that was like such an epic night. And like Marshall coming through and Daryl Anger. And it was just this, it was just amazing. And I look back at that time so fondly and it was so special. And you know, you when you're in it, you take it so for granted. Mm-hmm. It was just like I remember Sierra, she was 17 and she came to Berkeley with
Sierra Hull.
Yeah, Sierra Hull. She came up to Boston with her manager and to come and see Berkeley. And I, Roger Brown, who's the president of Berkeley, he put me as Sierra's like chaperone. So I took Sierra, came to all my lessons with me. And mm-hmm. I mean, I love Sierra. She's great. It was so funny. We were from such different worlds, but that was the amazing thing like about that place. It's just everybody was from all over the place, different accents, different backgrounds. And suddenly you're in this tight, this space where everybody's coexisting together. And it was just magic, you know, it was so cool.
My podcast is all about women in roots music. The musician's life can be challenging anyway, but often there are further challenges that women face. And I'd love to know your thoughts on that as a female artist.
Mm. Yeah, it's I've had my fair share of things over the years, situations where I felt a little bit disrespected. Anything from sound engineers presuming that you don't know anything about your gear, which is classic, to being in a band with somebody, a male band, and finding out I was being paid less than everybody else, which I confronted, and that changed, but it was and it was very uncomfortable, and it was very, very difficult, and very upsetting, and just a weird hierarchy thing.
Mm.
I wasn't expecting that one. Yeah, it was a challenge, and it was quite complicated. But I was the only woman in the band, and that was what it was. And anyway, I have no fear in confronting these things and speaking up. And even though it was the amount that had been agreed upon, I still said, you know, I found this out, and this doesn't, you know, this doesn't feel good at all.
Well, yes. Do you feel that things have improved in terms of, you know, navigating the world as a solo female artist?
Well, I actually have to say, I like that was a quite a unique situation. Mm. And one that I'm not sure why I haven't, but I don't think I've experienced nearly as many issues as I know a lot of other female artists have encountered. I don't know if that's because I have always played with men. I've always played fiddle in an instrumental setting and being very much accepted. I mean, growing up, like, for example, this Boston world, there was never like, oh, that's the girl and these are the gays. It was like, we all played together mm-hmm. the whole time. Mm. Same growing up in Edinburgh yeah. in the trad scene, there were guys, there were girls. It was just like that when I was younger, at least. So it was like, there wasn't too much of a thing, but I know for a lot of female songwriter friends of mine who maybe don't necessarily play lead, an instrument in their band, and there's a different vibes that go around for those people. And I think a lot of women have had a lot of issues on the road, and with, you know, being dropped, and if they announce they're pregnant and being dropped from their label or their agency. And I've not had any of that happen to me. But I don't know if it's because I've always done this, and maybe I'm not, and I can be quite fierce. You know, I really believe in equality. I don't. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of like, if this is something I want to do, like, I'm going to not be like, I'll just be in the back. No, like, if it's something that I'm trying to like be a part of, like, I'll put myself forward confidently, which I feel lucky that that's in my bones to do that. And I think that's part of my growing up with my mom was very like.
Funnily enough, I was listening to one of an old interview, and you mentioned this thing about having been described as fierce little player, and you and Laura Cortese. And I thought, I wonder if they would have said that to men, like, you know, fierce. It's kind of funny, fairly funny, funny word to be attached to. It's good to know that you've not had to encounter too many hurdles of that nature.
Yeah, but there's a lot of it going around, and it's weird. It's a weird off-balance thing, and it's definitely still very apparent in the world.
My impression is that you've kind of created a kind of chosen family, a truly transatlantic life, really, that you're still regularly in Scotland and England, but, you know, you've forged a life for yourself in the USA. And how did that kind of come to be, where you're able to get the best out of both countries?
Yeah, interesting question. I think wherever I go, I'm not really too fussed about surface level stuff. Like, I get quite deep with people, and mm-hmm. And I've been very fortunate to build some like really, really special friendships. As you said, my like chosen mm-hmm. family. Like, I really do. Like, I feel like I could go anywhere in the States and have that. And that's really important to me. And same in the UK. I mean, it's been interesting. This last while, I've been touring with a musician called Julian Baker, and she's like in the indie rock world. She's in her other band, Boy Genius. They're like, you know, it's a bigger production. She's very, very well known worldwide, and we're playing, you know, big rooms and stadiums and all of that. And I love it. It's so fun. It's like such a fun. It's going to take up a lot of this year for me, and it's great. But it's also such a contrast to doing what I've just done in the UK, playing in these rooms that are maybe 80 to 100 cap rooms, where you actually form relationships with people. And like, I could probably every single town that we went to on this last tour, we did, 15 gigs around the UK. I'm sure, like, from every single one, there's some person I'm like, oh, I'll definitely get back in touch with that person. Like, the relationships you form at, like, a merch table, you know, it's just sometimes so special. But in the more of the pop and indie world, there's not that same thing.
Yeah. I did want to ask you, I know you've been doing these side woman gigs with, you know, quite a big high-profile artist. Is it kind of a nice contrast from your solo work? How does it sort of compare, and what's that like?
It's great. Like, I love it. Like, I love having both of these things. I mean, there's lots of things going on right now, but this project, like, I mean, I grew up very much in like the DIY world, doing all yourself. And now I have various agents and people helping me with my other projects. But like with Julian's team, it's like everything's taken care of. I mean, I learn the music, do the rehearsals, and then we get on the bus and we do the gigs. And I have, that's it. I play the gig and I don't have anything else that I have to do. I mean, it's just so different from what I've ever done. And it's fun. And it actually is a lot less exhausting, because you just go and do the thing and then you can, you know, it's very different.
But I suppose emotionally, or you may be emotionally invested in the music, but I guess it's a different vibe from putting your entire heart and soul out there as a singer-songwriter doing your own original material, right?
Right, exactly. It's such a different thing. It's just a completely different energy. It's a very different job. It does feel like completely different things, which I personally love. Like that was, you know, I went to Berkeley to go and do old-time music, was what I really wanted to go and learn. And, but also I made so many contacts doing all of these other types of music. And it was through a friend of a friend from Berkeley who I ended up getting this gig through. Like a lot of it is the networking side of things. So that's always been my goal, has been to be able to do my own thing, do my own solo stuff, do my old-time duo commissions. And right now, this moment in time, I'm kind of counting I'm like, because it does, things feel balanced and I'm kind of doing exactly what I want to be doing right now. So it's a bit of a moment in time that I'm like, how long is this going to last for? Is this just a short-lived moment? But it feels good.
As you say, as a freelance, as a kind of independent artist, you have to be, even if you have a booking agent and a manager and what have you, you still have to do an awful lot of stuff that's not the musicking bit, don't you?
Yeah.
You have to be your own promoter all the time and doing your social media and, you know, the travel, especially the touring life. You know, it can be very wearing. And especially these days when the whole live music scene is getting tougher, you know, how do you navigate that? Have you seen changes over the years?
Yeah, you're right. It is tough right now. I think what people are making, say on more of these roots shows, it is tougher. It's not what it was, you know, 6 years ago, 7 years ago. It's harder.
And even then, it wasn't easy.
It's a real mix of things. Like ticket sales are hard. I mean, the economy is, it's difficult right now. It definitely is. And for some people, coming to a show is, they, you know, people don't want to spend like £16 on a ticket, which I mean, I'm like, well, you'd spend £16 on a, you know, on whatever. But
I find it quite interesting. I think at the kind of roots music level, the tickets are extremely reasonable because they haven't really increased, certainly in the UK. I think where the people aren't feeling as confident, and obviously some people are struggling. And then the other weird thing is that up at the top, there's, a, you know, tens of thousands of people who, hundreds of thousands, who'll spend 100 quid, 150 quid, 200 quid on a gig ticket to go and see a celebrity or legacy act. So it's quite interesting to me.
It is. It's when you do the number crunching and you look at all of this, it's like, it's an interesting time. I mean, I actually, going into our tour, we were a bit unsure about how ticket sales were going to be. And we ended up packing out most rooms. Like the majority of the rooms were packed out. And then that's down to the promoters.
I think that's another trend since the pandemic, that if people do book tickets, and they, you know, people are still going to gigs, but they leave it very late. I think it's very different from 5 years ago. And so that's a very nerve-wracking thing for promoters and for musicians.
Yeah, there was quite a lot of like day before bookings. It's tricky. And you can push that on social media, be like, hey, it's great. If you want to come, fantastic. If you can please book in advance, amazing. Like, it helps. And you see musicians doing it all the time.
So I believe you're moving to Alaska this year, which sounds quite exciting.
Correct.
I heard you in a previous interview saying that it kind of reminds you of the west coast of Scotland in some ways.
Yeah. So the reason I'll be moving up there is my husband is from Alaska, and we've spent a lot of time there over the past few years and just love it. It's so special, a really special place, special music community. It's just a real, like, warm and raw thing going on there. I mean, it is really the last frontier. So it's out there. There is something very, you know, visceral, like very, like, very similar feeling there to the west coast of Scotland. I mean, I was saying this to someone the other day, like, if you cover your ears and you don't hear the accent in Alaska and you're in like in the woods and you're playing tunes and you see people all kind of milling around, it could easily be the west coast of Scotland. More than anywhere else I've ever been. It's a special, special spot.
I guess you can get your fix of city life when you're touring around and then go back to more rural home life.
Right. Exactly. Like that. I mean, where we live right now is significantly quiet. I mean, I lived in New York for 11, 12 years, kind of the last couple of years where I was a bit back and forth between the UK, but mm-hmm. a long time there. And I loved it. I love New York. I'll be there this week for other work. Like, I'm there a lot, but I don't need to live there anymore. I'm like, it was so wonderful. Like, but being on tour, and which is always kind of hectic, and coming back to New York, I feel like my nervous system just couldn't get a break. And so now we're out here and it's definitely way chiller. Yeah, I think moving up to Alaska, which is actually socially pretty happening up there. There's a lot going on. The community is so rich that I could be doing something every single night of the week if I want to, which is great. But also I can like take a breather and be in my quiet zone, which the older I get, the more important that feels.
That sounds ideal. So musically then, what's coming up for you or professionally in 2025? You mentioned Fungi Sessions Volume 2.
Yeah, so that's the plan, is for that to come out this summer, maybe late summer. So that will be featured in Fungi 2 is going to be featured in a new exhibition at the Botanics. There's going to be another exhibition which is going to feature my first fungi and my second fungi all in this one immersive thing, which is being developed right now. But that's coming, that'll open the 2nd of August.
That's definitely something for Scotland and UK folks to look out for.
Yeah, that's, I'm really excited about that actually. I might be over later on in the year. I'll probably be over in August mm-hmm. for some of this stuff. But I'm going to be touring primarily with Julian Baker and Torres, which is a country. It's going to be a country project. And we'll be doing, a bunch of bucket list great gigs this summer. Or the gigs start next week, actually.
It's nonstop for you, Hannah.
It feels exciting. It's an exciting time doing. I'll be at Newport Folk Fest this summer, as well as Red Rocks and various other places. That it just feels, lots of bucket list things. So that those will be going on, and in between those, I'm hoping to chill. I mean, I say chill, we'll be kind of moving up to Alaska between the breaks and
establish your new home there.
Yeah. So it's a big year of a lot of music and a big year of a lot of transition as well. So we'll see what kind of nick I'm in by the end of the year.
Well, we wish you a lot of luck with that. And tell the folks in podcast land where they can find out more about Hannah Reid and buy your music.
Yeah, so hannahreid.com. And on my Bandcamp page, and I post regularly on Instagram. And
I'll put the links in the show notes.
Yeah, those are the main places for music. And I have a mailing list as well, so if folk go on my website, they can get updates there.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for talking to us. It's been really interesting, and you've always got so much of a zest for life, and it's fantastic. So positive always speaking to you, Hannah.
Well, thanks. It's been, it's, I've I would have never said no. It's really nice. I'm a big fan of what you do, Maria. You're doing some really cool stuff over there, and I'm excited for your musical adventures as well.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Women Folk was produced and presented by me, Maria Wallace. Check out the show notes to find out more about Hannah Reid and her music, and visit my website truenorthmusic.co.uk for more information about the podcast. You can also find and listen to episodes of Women Folk wherever you get your podcasts.